Transcript of this episode is available at rebuild.fm/122. Quick announcement in Japanese will follow and we'll be right into the show with Aaron. このエピソードは全編英語ですが、文字起こしが rebuild.fm/122 のトランスクリプトというリンクからダウンロードできますので、チェックしてみてください。
Silence my phone and watch.
You have to stand up every hour, right?
Oh, yeah.
Do you stand up?
Yeah, I do. I'm trying to get like perfect score. I like the game system.
Yeah. Controlled by the watch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Although, like, I'll be programming, right? And then it'll say, hey, stand up. And then I'll just stand up and run around. And Abby's like, what are you doing?
And that's every hour.
Every hour, yeah.
And 15 minutes.
Yes.
I'm recording this on Monday after a Ruby Kaigi. And we're doing this at my hotel near the venue at the Kaigi. And here's a guest. It's a second appearance in my show. Aaron Patterson or Tender Love. Welcome to my show again.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So, yesterday, you gave a talk about RAG and HTTP2, and I don't think this is the first time ever you give this talk.
No.
No.
First time in Japanese.
Right. And I think you did the talk about RAG in general previously as well.
Yeah. I've been working on RAG for quite a while, but I mean, basically dealing with API issues and stuff.
Yeah.
But this is the first time we've really focused on H2.
Yeah. So can you dive into a little deep? What's the current state of RAG and H2?
Sure. So right now, most of the stuff that I've done so far is pretty experimental. I posted some code up called, there's a gem called DS9. Well, it's not actually a gem yet. I haven't released it. It's just on my GitHub. But it wraps up NGHTTP2 so that we can make H2 web servers easily.
Mm-hmm.
So I integrated an H2 web server with RAC, basically gave it a RAC API, and then integrated that with Rails as well. So, I mean, most of that was just for discovering what we need to do internally with Rails and RAC in order to support H2. But I think we've figured out most of that by now.
Okay.
So
DS9 is a web server?
No, it's not a web server. It just... So the kind of cool thing about NGHTTP2 is that it's... That's the name is so hard to say. No, so the cool thing about it is it doesn't know anything about IOs or file descriptors or anything like that. So basically, it only knows about the H2 protocol. So you can hook it in with anything that provides some sort of IO interface. So you can use this library with Puma or Webbrick or whatever, really.
Okay, so I guess previously, I mean, currently Puma and Webbrick and all the RAG web server handles the HTTP 1.1 and then converted it into a RAG environment and
yes.
Then call the app and get the response back from the app.
Mm-hmm.
So you hook into that server side and the app side and then turn it into handling H2 in addition to HTTP 1.
Yeah, exactly. So basically, at the time that the connection is negotiated, we can determine whether or not they support H2 over via the SSL connection. So that's why one thing I had to do was add ALPN support or whatever to OpenSSL, the OpenSSL wrapper in Ruby, so that we could use it. So right now, I mean, you can use DS9 now, but you can't tell if it's an H2 connection without using Trunk Ruby.
Okay. Trunk Ruby.
Yes.
Why is that?
All of the all the SSL negotiation stuff is just in Trunk Ruby. It hasn't been it hasn't been released yet, so it should come out. I mean, we could release it in the OpenSSL gem, or it'll also come out when 2.3 comes out. So,
I guess it doesn't depend anything on the Ruby as a language, but it depends on some of the features of only available with the OpenSSL,
which
is bundled in the Trunk Ruby.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. That's kind of unfortunate. I guess people would like to use that feature with like 2.1 or 2.2 without upgrading Ruby to...
Yeah. There's an OpenSSL gem, and all the changes are in that gem. It's just that we haven't released the gem yet.
Yeah.
I think Zizak is in charge of releasing the gem, and I don't think he's done it yet. So
yeah, I keep hearing those unbundling standard library into a gem, I could say JSON is one example.
Yeah. So that one's a separate gem. It just hasn't been. We just haven't done it yet.
Right. Let's step back a little bit. So what's the although motivation to support H2? Because there's a couple of H2. Implementation that runs as a standalone server, and for example, Nginx does H2, and you can put any app, whether it's Ruby or whether it's Java or Python, you can run it behind Nginx, and the connection between the front end proxy and the actual backend app could be HTTP/1 instead of 2, right?
Yeah. That's correct. So the reason I'm doing it, there's basically two reasons that I'm looking into this. One is that I want to be able to use H2 in development without forcing someone to set up a proxy server. Mm. So I'm hoping to speed up the development environment, so we don't have to do concatenation, or we don't do asset concatenation and whatnot in development today. And I wanted to see what it's like if we used H2 in the development process, so we don't need to deal with that. The second reason is that probably I don't plan on using an H2 web server in a Ruby H2 web server in production. Probably I'll use a proxy that supports H2. But you can put link headers in the response body and have the H2 server serve those things up, or let the browser prefetch them or whatever. But we needed to put the infrastructure required to emit those in Rails is the same as doing H2 support, right? So once we understand how to do H2 support, we can easily just put link headers in instead.
I guess today, if you have a bunch of assets in the assets directory, Rails will just serve individual files on the development time without any compression, any concatenation.
Yeah.
But once you push to a production with a deployment mode, it will
all be concatenated. Yeah.
That kind of mechanism will stay with H2, so that, I mean, ideally with your H2 support, that will be changed so that in the development time, a Ruby's H2 implementation will serve those files, but on the production, it will probably handle with additional server that runs in front of the Ruby server.
Yes, that's correct. Yep. I mean, someday I'd like to get rid of the concatenation step.
Yeah.
But even in production, but I don't think that's going to happen until everybody's running H2. It's not going to happen for a long time.
Right.
So
I guess, yeah, concatenation is arguably a workaround for HTTP/1 because there's a limitation on the simultaneous connections. With H2, the connection is multiplexed. Mm-hmm. So if you have a bunch of files, that's not an issue.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So I'm hoping that in the future if we can eliminate that concatenation step, it should clean up a lot of, for example, the sprockets code. Mm. We can get rid of a lot of that logic around asset concatenation.
And if you have, for example, 100 of CSS files or JavaScript files, right now, if you update any single file, you have to concatenate everything and
submit.
But with the a proper implementation, all the other 99 files will stay in the cache, and then only the one file will be updated.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah, so I mean, that's like the long, long-term goal, but right now, I mean, I don't actually think much is going to change right now. It's mostly internals,
yeah.
Internal stuff changing today so that we can support it in the future.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think there was a question about DS9,
yes.
The name.
Yes.
You probably want to explain.
Oh, it's a stupid name. It's a bad name. It's just, so NG HTTP2 means... next generation HTTP2. So first off, I thought that name was funny. Next generation HTTP2, because it's already HTTP2 is already the next one.
Yeah.
So then I heard next generation. It's like the next generation of the next generation.
Right.
And then of course, I just think Star Trek next generation. So that's why I changed, or that's why I use DS9, Star Trek, the next one is DS9.
Okay,
so.
I get that. I think you have already noticed, but a joke with using the Star Trek doesn't make a lot of sense to Japanese
audience. No, not at all.
Yeah, most people are not familiar with that series.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's kind of tough
to
explain. Yeah.
Probably only Americans will get it, and also it's not that funny.
I think it's funny once you get it.
Yeah, once you get it, it's fine. It's fine, but I actually just like the name because it's short.
Yeah, it's shorter to type.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's a library, and then you're not running any process, anything.
No.
Right? So are you currently experimenting with Webbrick?
Yeah.
Correct?
Yes. I've also tried integrating with... Puma. I mean, one thing that I think is interesting about H2 is that it totally changes the connection paradigm for clients, right? And I mean, normally with HTTP 1.1, you're making tons and tons of connections. So each client makes tons of, hopefully, short connections. Unless they're using keep alives, then it'll have longer connections. But typically, an HTTP 1 connection is going to be shorter than an H2 connection, right? You're going to keep an H2 connection open for a very, very long time, which means that web servers are going to have to change. Like, for example, Web or Unicorn, if you read the README, it says this is only for very fast clients, right? And that makes sense because it's meant to run behind a proxy, and then the proxy will handle all that stuff. But as far as a Ruby implementation of H2 is concerned, we're going to have to change the way that the web servers work. Like, for example, Puma is going to have to handle longer connections. Or I think there's also Rainbows does longer, slow connections. So, slow.
Time-consuming process that doesn't block the clients and processes at all.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's interesting. Anyway, I tried integrating that with Puma, and I had a bit of a hard time with it, but Evan was here at the Kaigi, so we were talking about it. So I think Puma's going to get H2 support, but hopefully Evan will do that for me.
Yeah. Have you successfully convinced him doing that?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he was interested in it. I mean, the question is, I think the main question is, are you going to be using H2 in production, right? On the application server itself. I mean, probably I'm not going to be. I'll be doing it behind a proxy.
Right.
Right. So if that's the case, if everybody's going to be doing it behind a proxy, then does it really matter if Puma uses H2 or not, unless you're going to do it in development mode?
Right.
I mean,
yeah, that was my next question. It's interesting that you are experimenting with Webbrick, because Webbrick doesn't sound like something you want to put on production.
No, definitely not.
And Webrick, if my understanding is right, Webrick is a single process web server.
Yes.
So you can only handle one request at a time. Is that right?
No. Well, it's single process, but it's multi-threaded.
Multi-threaded. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So it can do multiple requests or requests in parallel.
Okay.
Yeah. The weird thing is that I think I just deleted this too in Rails 5. So we had a hack in Rails to, if you're using Webrick, then we put a lock around the request and basically lock the entire server. So we would make Webrick to only do one request at a time.
Okay. That's the Rails specific.
Yeah.
Hack.
Yeah. That's a Rails specific hack. If you're just using Webrick straight, then it'll do multiple parallel requests. Mm-hmm. But, if you're using it with Rails, that would not. And we can't.
Sorry, was that because a lot of Rails active record and stuff are not considered thread safe in the Rails run?
No. Well, there was one thing that's not thread safe, and that's doing code reloading.
Yeah. Oh.
So basically, a long time ago, somebody. Rather than figure out how to make code reloading safe, they just added a lock around the entire thing. So since then, we've made code reloading thread safe. But another problem came along is that, you know, Webrick is probably the most popular Ruby web server in the world because everybody who uses Heroku, if they just push an empty a test app or their new, you know, their very first application to Heroku, they're using Webrick.
Yeah. It's kind of scary, though.
So tons and tons of people are using Webrick. But what's weird is that since this lock has been around forever, people are writing code that's not thread safe. So we kept the lock so we wouldn't break people's applications. But since Rails 5 is coming up and it's 5.0, we're saying, okay, it's time to pull this.
Right. So if you run a web app in Heroku with the default Webrick web app, web server, you have to be careful to see if anything breaks.
Yes. Well,
I guess they better upgrade to something like Unicorn.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you're doing anything serious on Heroku, you need to, or any serious web serving, you're probably going to change to Puma or Unicorn, something besides Webrick.
Right.
I mean, because of... Immediately, you're going to find out that, oh, I can't do anything in parallel.
Right.
And I can't, you know, I'm wasting my resources on Heroku. So yeah. You'll change web servers, hopefully.
Yeah, you can have less instance of Dino.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you change web servers and it saves you money. So
yeah, I think Heroku recommends to use Puma and Unicorn as well.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
That makes a lot of sense. Okay, so I guess we talked about it earlier as well, but to implement this H2, the current RAC specification, is that enough to support H2, all the H2 stuff, or does it need to be changed, updated?
So I want to add, we need to change it, but there's only one thing I really need to add, and that's a way to do push processing or push, what is it called? I can't remember.
Server push?
Yeah, server push. Thank you. Basically, all I'm going to do is add a new, it's a huge hack, but I'm just going to add a new key to the nvash that has a object you can call to do pushes.
Okay.
Essentially. And then that'll call back into the web server and let you push whatever. So it'll be up to the web server to implement push processing.
Okay.
Like actually do the implementation, but we'll just add a new key that's like, okay, you can call that.
So I think RAC specification is a server packs the env hash, pass it to the app, app process whatever they want to do, and they return an array containing the status code and headers and bodies.
Yep.
That's basically just a request and response process. And then to support H2 server push, an app needs to send additional thing to the server process.
Yes.
so that server will provide that hook.
Yes.
In the YAML key that app can call anytime they want.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So they just do, they'll just say, okay, I want to push something, and they'll call that method, or there'll be an object in the env hash that they can call a method on, and the web server is going to have to implement that. But then when they call it, the web server will do the push.
Okay.
So
I think Thin implemented that kind of thing first to support WebSocket.
Yeah, there's a thing like this is another interesting thing. Well, I don't know if it's interesting. It actually this is one really big problem, and that thing that I had to do a lot of refactoring on in Rack is that people writing applications from an HTTP 1 perspective assume that there is one connection.
Right.
Right. And the problem with that is, for example, when you do MIME type parsing. So somebody does a MIME post, a multi-part post, right? So if you look at the multi-part parser in Rack, it assumes that it has an IO object that it can read from and parse. Whereas with H2, since it's multiplexed on one socket, that doesn't exist anymore. You have to have an evented IO model where we're pushing data into the parser. So where this is a huge problem is that if you read the Rack spec, there's one key that's like, okay, I want the IO object. You can access the IO object, but in an H2 world, that doesn't make sense.
Right. I think if you want to be 100% compatible, you have to fake some kind of IO object.
Yes.
That app will pull rather than the server pushes to the app, right?
Yep. I mean, we can do... So it's possible to do that. It's just...
that's gross, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's really inefficient because server telling the app when it's ready to pull the data is much more efficient than app constantly pulling the data from the IO and socket.
Yes, yes. So, I mean, I don't know... We can implement it. It's just not going to be fun, and it won't be fast. But I think that's okay, because you can just say, like, don't do that, you know. And you can also tell if you're using H2 or not. So,
right,
should be okay, I think.
Yeah.
It's just an interesting... Basically, I thought it was an interesting side effect. Like, you read the code, and there's so many assumptions that we just have one IO object, and it's just... not true anymore.
Right. Yeah, interesting. So currently I assume that it's kind of a hack, and are you thinking about doing that properly without using that kind of a gross hack?
Yeah, that's so basically I think what we're going to do is Rack 2 is going to have this type of support in it, 2.0. So when I say Rack 2, I mean people talk about Rack spec, but I'm talking about the gem.
Okay.
So, I mean, the spec is going to get a little bit of an update, but I'm updating Rack to Rack 2.0 in order to, just fix bad APIs and stuff. But in the 2.0 gem, we're just going to add the hacks in so that you actually get the support and can do stuff. I think in Rack 3.0, we're actually going to do it properly, give it a good OO API, and let you like make things nicer in that way. And that'll 3.0 will probably have a lot of breaking changes, I think.
Okay. And so that will change the spec and the gem
at
the same time.
Yes, exactly. So 3.0, essentially, Rack 2.0 won't touch the spec, or well, only a little bit touch the spec. Rack 3.0 will greatly change the spec and change the gem.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. I think... So I guess the slides and video will be posted soon on the Ruby Kaigi website. But you mentioned Rack was really successful because the API is simple and reduced the explosion of interdependencies between the web server and the web app.
Mm-hmm.
I like the Rack spec because it's just a hash and an array.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, technically, you don't need to use the Rack gem to implement Rack server, correct? But if you go to this Rack 3.0 spec and the gem update.
Mm-hmm.
Is it still a separate thing, or are you expecting all of the implementations to use Rock Gem and not worry too much about the spec updates?
Oh, it's hard to say. I want to make sure that the spec is still simple enough that you don't actually need Rack at all. But I do want to put things in Rack that are convenient that everybody might want to use. So, for example, every web server has their own way of writing headers to the socket. It's essentially the same code that they're just using to write to the socket. And I just think, why are you doing that? If we do it in one place, then we can reduce duplication of code. So I want to put stuff in Rack that's convenient so that web server authors will want to do it, but they don't have to.
Okay. Yeah, the reason I brought it up is because it's just kind of like a Java sublet. So if you want to implement a Java subreddit...
Don't say it. Don't say Java.
Sorry. I'm not supposed to say that, the J word. But the sublet endpoint basically takes a request object and response object.
Yeah.
And you have to implement hundreds of methods.
Yep. Yes, I know. I know.
To satisfy the sublet specification.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't want Rack to go to that direction.
No, neither do I. I used to be a J2EE developer. Yeah, I definitely don't want to do that at all. I want to be more like Node, really, in this sense. If you look at Node's request and response API, it's pretty small.
Okay.
Especially compared to J2EE.
That's true. Yeah, so only a couple of useful methods and some event hooks.
Yeah.
Rather than just pulling data from the server.
Yes, exactly. I mean, I want to make sure the API, it's very important to me that the API, I want the API to be OO, but I want it to be small. Because if we do something like J2EE, that's like,
yeah,
that's killer.
Right.
The thing is, the thing that bugs me about the nvhash API stuff is you think, oh, it seems like a small API because it's just a hash and you just use key value pairs. But the problem is those hash keys are arbitrary, right? So if you think about it from that perspective, it's actually a giant API an infinitely sized API because you can have an infinite number of keys stored right in the hash. So you're like, okay, I need to have some feature. Well, here's the list of all the keys in the nvhash. Which key do I actually need?
Yeah. Each key have individual semantic.
Yes.
So if this key exists, do this. If this key is one, it means something.
Yes. That's one of the things I don't like. Another is that there's kind of a... not really a standard of what the key is supposed to be. Like more of a suggestions, like, okay, for Rails, we use maybe active record dot something right is the key value. And for Rack, it's Rack dot something. But we also mix in CGI parameters in there too. So it's like, okay, all the uppercase ones, those are CGI parameters. And I don't know.
Yeah.
Mecha kucha.
It's kind of messy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess it's simple. It's dumb and simple. That's why it's been popular and successful.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think those are good. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I complain, I'm complaining about it, but every API is going to have problems, right? It's just a thing, you know?
Yeah, it's not one, it's better than the other.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to do my best radio voice.
If you get closer, it will add some proximity effect.
Hello. Yeah. Hello.
You'll boost a little bit bass like this.
Oh.
But don't get too close.
So that's how you do it.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to play some jazz music tonight.
Oh, this, sorry, this is live, isn't it?
It's live, then it's no problem. It's just part of the show, no problem.
Yeah, so it's fun. I don't know, doing the hash stuff isn't so great, but looking at, I mean, coming up with a better API for it is fun. It's an interesting thing to do, and I don't know, I want to make, it's, most important things to me are, one, making sure that it's backwards compatible. Even though I said we're going to make tons of changes for Rack 3.0, I still want to have, I have ideas for making sure that we have a backwards compatibility layer, because I don't want people to just go, oh, this breaks everything, I'm never upgrading.
Actually, RackAmb has a special key, rack.version, rack.spec, something like that, to specify the version that a web server supports.
Yep.
So for the web, the server that doesn't update to the latest Rack spec, you can expect it to be 100% compatible.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
no need to change anything.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. So, I mean, you know, I say we're going to make all these changes, but I don't think people should be afraid, you know. Oh, no, nothing works. I mean, that's the last thing I want. I mean, Matt's gave a, wasn't, I guess he did talk about backwards. He talked about backwards compatibility a lot in his talk this time. And it's, I believe the same thing that he was referring to, essentially saying, you know, if you change everything, like, for example, Python 3 or Perl 6, people aren't going to upgrade, right? They're not. Well, I guess Perl 6 is just coming out, so yeah. we don't actually know that yet. But, you know, Python 3, for example, is like, people don't, everything got changed, so they can't upgrade. Right. So the adoption rate is so slow, and I don't want that, like, I really don't want that to be the case.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think what Mats said was backward compatibility is really important. And if you do make an incompatible changes, there should be a compelling reason.
Yes, yes.
And a user benefit to do that.
Exactly, exactly. And that's, I mean, so when I say, when I'm talking about Rack 3.0, I think that's actually very, very far in the future, because the strategy that I came up with for Rack 2 to support H2, it'll work. It's not great, but it'll work and be completely backwards compatible. So, you know, people won't mind upgrading.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I think hopefully we can figure out a way to slowly do that. And I'm actually doing some conversions of the Rails, like Rails internals, to use more objects. I didn't mention this in the talk, but if you look at the code in the middleware, maybe 80% of the Rails middleware will take the env hash and immediately convert it into a request object.
Yep. Yeah.
And then just use that object, which I think is funny, because it means it's generating a new request object every single time.
Yeah. How many middleware stack do you have in the development mode in the Rails? I think it's like 20, 30.
Yeah, so that sounds about right. Yeah, it's interesting, because even if you do like in Rails, you do rake middleware, it'll show you like a list. But that's not really all of them. there's a bunch of other stuff in there as well. Like, it doesn't show, I mean, Rails has a bunch of internal middleware that's supposed to be internal, essentially, like middleware for looking up your controller and stuff like that. And it doesn't show those in the middleware list, because if you didn't have that, the application wouldn't work at all.
Right. So that's part of the Rails.
Yeah. Core. Yes,
and
exactly.
The rake task will only show the ones that you can disable if you want.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's not essential.
Yes.
I think it's essential, but it's not required.
Yes. Yes.
Cool. Yeah. I have seen the other talk in Ruby Kaigi about another Rack handler. It's Reebok, I think. This is about optimizing a Rack web server in the context of something like Unicorn.
Yeah.
And optimizing a lot of HTTP header parsing and bypassing all the string allocation.
Yeah, I saw the talk. It was really cool.
Yeah.
It was cool.
I think that shows a problem with the amp hash approach, because Ruby hash isn't, it's a string allocation. So
yeah.
It could be optimized. I mean, if we want to optimize, the hash is the limit.
Yes.
And
yes.
I think you mentioned that in your slides as well. You could technically stuff this amp hash with something else, which is, could be faster than Ruby's hash,
mm-hmm.
but a user will expect it to behave like
hash. A hash. Yes, yes.
So in theory, a user might rely on some esoteric method in the hash object. And if you substitute the env hash with something else, if that object doesn't have that method, things will blow up.
Yes, yes. I mean, one thing we could do for maybe even Rack 2.0. I just thought of this now. One thing we could do is make part of the spec, we could say, like, the env hash is limited. The methods that you can use are limited to, you know, X, Y, and Z. And then basically use Rack lint to enforce that. And if stuff breaks, you know, if people are using methods they shouldn't be using, it'll work today because it really is just a hash today, but maybe we don't guarantee that it'll work in the future. And we could maintain some sort of object that, you know, works 90% of the time.
Yeah, I assume 99% of the middleware will just fine with the get method and set method.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly.
And maybe exists method.
Yeah, yeah. But key, you really just need, you know, does it have the key? Get the key, set the key, you know, does it have it, get it, set it. I don't know what else you'd need.
Right, yeah. I think so, yeah. But the hash, Ruby hash object has like 100.
So yeah, oh yeah. And I know Rails internally uses a bunch of them, although master might not anymore because I went through and changed pretty much all of them to only use, you know, check, set, get. So, but before that, it was definitely using
right
weird stuff.
Stuff, yeah.
Delete if.
Delete if, is it delete a key that if it's...
Yeah, exists? Delete a key. No. It's delete a key or delete a key, but delete if takes a block and it deletes it if the block returns true.
Ah.
And part of the problem... So one of the reasons it's using that is because the... This ties back to the other project I've been working on in Rails, is to refactor all of the refactor the test framework internally. If you look at the controller tests today, it actually reuses that hash. That's why it uses delete if. So it gets that env hash and basically reuses the same hash for subsequent requests.
Mm.
Right. So we have to like clean it up.
Right.
So we've been looking at refactoring that to be more of, well, I would like controller tests to go away, actually, and just be everything be integration tests, which means that we don't reuse any objects. It's, I guess, more functional.
Right.
So
it always feels kind of strange that Rails has an API to access env hash, because env hash is just a specification.
Yes.
There might be some legit use case to store some request time object into this env hash. It's a really convenient storage.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually really good. And part of, well, that use case is very important. And it's one of the things I want to maintain even going into the future, is you definitely need to store request-specific data somewhere. Like you absolutely have data that's request-specific. Like, for example, I think it would be nicer if we would store the database connection in the request, because you only use that resource for the request, right? At the end of when the response is done, you don't need the database connection anymore, so it can go away. Other stuff too, I don't know, we have some maybe mutexes or just things like that that's really request specific, and it's nice to maintain that. And that's one thing I don't like about the env API today, is that we're mixing these Rails specific, like database specific locks and stuff, along with, you know, the post parameters,
right,
or whatever. It does, like, we've got this hash that's just a mix of essentially random data, right?
Right. Yeah. I think it makes sense to limit the access to those stuff and inside the framework, but not to the app.
That's... Yeah. Yeah. I mean, ideally what I would like is we have one storage location for data that came from the client, and then another location of just internal stuff.
Right.
So we don't have to mix those. I mean, today we have to mix those too, but I would like it if we don't have to mix those anymore.
Okay. Yeah. So I think last year, I think you were on the show and we talked about the middle.
Yes.
I think you didn't talk about it in the conference, but I think I saw you talk about it on some other conference or GitHub. I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
And so we brought up the middle.
Yes. Yes.
So is the middle gone? And
Rack 3 is the new
Rack
middle.
Rack 3 is
yeah,
the
yeah.
middle.
That's exactly. That's okay. It. Yes, the metal is dead. It is dead. Rack 3 will be that.
Okay, so instead of making the new rack-ish stuff, you decided to just build it into the rack.
So. Yes, yeah, exactly. I mean, we'll see. So as we get closer to Rack 3, I'll see whether or not it's better to just completely change the name of the gem, but I don't want to, as I said, I don't want to break backwards compatibility, so
right.
I don't see a reason to, you know, I don't see a reason to release a brand new thing.
Right.
I mean, the main reason for releasing a brand new thing is to just drop all the baggage that you had with the old thing, but just like Mats was saying in his talk, if you do that, then nobody's going to adopt it, and then, you know, you have a lot of problems. So,
right.
I mean, although as a developer, it's very tempting.
Yeah, I can totally understand that sentiment. Yeah, it's really tempting to throw away all the baggage and start from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
But
you can't do it. Nobody will use it.
Right. So you experimented a little bit with the metal.
Yes.
You decided it's the right thing to do with the Rack 3.
Yeah, exactly. Well, also integrating, I mean, especially integrating the H2 stuff, most of that, I mean, experimenting with H2 is the main driver. Like, looking at the metal was essentially, I was looking around at different stuff, trying out different APIs, but then getting H2 integration accomplished was really the, I don't know, that was the point where I said, yes, this will work. I mean, if we can work with H2, since we can make this work well with H2, this is the way we should go.
Right.
Because, I mean, that's the future of the web, so we should probably support it.
Support the future.
Yes.
Yeah. The making the development faster, it's such a great motivation for users to upgrade.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, you said if you open a localhost 5,000, 3,000, it takes like seconds to boot up.
Yes.
All the assets and CSS,
yes,
JavaScript will take a time to render and...
our application at work, I mean, you can check out our app on GitHub. That's what we develop, you know, what we develop at work, and it has just hundreds, so many assets. When you do that first page load, it's just like, you look at the logs and it's like, going down. You look at the inspector and it's like,
So there's a mountain.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Or a waterfall or something.
Yeah, waterfall, yes.
It's a slow waterfall that takes a lot of time to render.
A very dripping waterfall.
Yeah. So your experimentation, is it in a branch right now?
If you look at my Rails fork on GitHub, you'll see there's a branch there. Also, there's a branch on Rack as well. I think it's just called... I think they're actually all called Rack 2, even though that's technically wrong. But right. That's the name of the branch if you want to check it out. But what I've been doing is just taking those changes and slowly merging them into Rails. So if you go look at the two branches, they're actually getting closer and closer together right now. So basically my plan is that Rails 5 probably isn't going to do H2 out of the box, but it'll have all of the stuff internally that if you had an H2 server, we could hook it into that.
Nice, nice.
So that's basically my plan.
Mm. Okay, interesting. Mm. Yeah.
So yeah, you can check out the code. Please check out the code.
Is it on github.com/tenderlove?
Tenderlove Rails, yeah.
Right.
And then, yeah, it's... I don't know why. I mean, I had to branch so many... I had to fork so many things to get it to work. But yeah, if you look at my Rails branch on GitHub and then the... I think I pushed the branch to the main rack repo, I think. But that might also be Tenderlove rack. Just look in those two places and you'll find it.
Right. So you have to have a gem file that points to...
Yes, yes.
All those Tenderlove repo.
Yep. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But if you point at those, then you can get it to work. It'll work.
Cool.
Yeah. And you have to, of course, you have to use DS9 along with those as well. And I need to... I'll just release that when I get home. That I put off releasing that gem because, I wanted to make sure I got all the API wrapped and working, and it's mostly working at this point. One thing that's missing is multi-part posts. So I'm not sure exactly what we're going to do about multi-part posts in the H2 world. So we can handle it. It's just that H2 is event-driven, right? And Rails is not event-driven. Rails is very... what is the opposite of event-driven? Non-event-driven?
I think that's correct.
So when somebody does a post, these callbacks get called that say, hey, here's some new data, and... maybe in the Rails server, you haven't asked for that yet. So we need to figure out how to coordinate those two. Because, I mean, essentially in Rails, you're asking for something where H2 is telling you something. So it's the difference between asking and telling. So
I guess in theory, you have to have some middleman.
Yes. Yeah. So we'll need to do, I'm not sure exactly what we'll do. Maybe we'll have it. Maybe we'll have a separate thread that handles the posts and then just locks until you ask for it. I'm also not sure what would happen with trying to think about security with this too. Is like if somebody tries posting a very, very large post to you and you don't expect that, what would that do? I mean, we don't want to buffer the whole thing up and then chew up all your memory. So, I mean, trying to figure out what to do with that as well. Right. So.
Yeah, that aligns a lot with my recent development with the Perl rack equivalent block. We pretty much share the same problem. We have to handle the post uploads, and some web servers handle these I/O differently from the other server. And as a reference implementation, I have to deal with all the differences.
Yeah,
and then so the app can run on any server without knowing all the details between that.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the servers will buffer everything, and that's actually easier, but it will consume a lot of memory.
Oh yeah.
So you have to save it into some temporary buffer and then pass it into the app.
Mm-hmm.
All that kind of, stuff.
Right now, so I believe right now the rack 1.0 or the current rack spec is, it just does, well, for multi-part posts, I think it just saves them off into a temp file.
Yep.
But then there you also have problems because, so we had a security issue with that quite a while back that was basically people could open up. So you could send a whole bunch of very short MIME posts and it would use up all the file descriptors on your web server. So we have to limit the file descriptors that you have. So it's just, It's not fun. I don't like doing security.
Right.
It makes me wish, I just think, you know, software would be a lot more fun if people didn't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Writing code to protect from attackers, DOS.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's not so productive.
It feels like you're wasting your time. I mean, I say that it sounds kind of bad because you're not wasting your time. You're protecting people from getting harmed and stuff. Sure. But you're not like, are you making the world better? You're not, you know, you're not producing some new, you know, nice thing for people to use. You're just trying to protect from, you know.
Right. It is very important to do it.
Yes.
But that's often not rewarded.
No. I mean, important, being important and reward are not necessarily connected at all.
Unfortunately, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, cool. I will put all the links to GitHub repository.
Yeah. I'll send you an email with the...
Yeah.
The exact repositories, you know where to post.
Maybe some example gem file.
Yeah, I can do that. I got a sample app that's running H2, so we can just actually, yeah, I have that on my laptop. I can just push that up if it's not pushed up already. No, I already have it pushed up. I can just send you a link to that, and then it'll point at all the right repositories. So
that's cool.
Yeah,
yeah, I'll put links to those URLs in the show notes, which will be available on rebuild.fm/122.
It's currently pointing at a local copy of DS9, so I need to fix that.
So you have a path?
I have a path in there. I need to give it a git repository so that you can use it.
It will only work with
on my laptop. Yes.
Yeah, that's probably it has to be updated.
So. Yes. Yep.
Yeah. Cool. I look forward to these releases and updates for Rails and Rack and DS9 and all that.
Good. Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for our chat. It's been fun.
Yeah. Thank you for having me on. It was a good time.
Yeah. Thanks.